morning, everyone. Welcome back. It's September 27th, 2014. This is a meeting of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. Welcome, visitors in the audience. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Our first item is open public input, and we have a couple people who've signed up. Jim Stevenson, would you please come forward? We offer citizens 3 minutes, so if you'd please take a seat in front of a microphone and provide us your thoughts. If, when you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up. So,
okay. Thank you very much. I would like to pass out a brochure I made up here.
You don't need to do that now. Okay. You can give it to Tammy.
I'm a retired biologist. I worked for the Yakima Nation for 17 years. And during that period of time, we reintroduced pronghorn antelope to the reservation. I'm sure most of you are aware of this. And they have increased quite a bit and spread out into Benton County. And I am really in favor of the state getting on board. I'm a member of the a Game Management Advisory Committee, and I would really like to take this opportunity to encourage you people to find out as much as you can. There's been some controversial issues about disease and crop depredation. I think those have been pretty well answered, and I'm just here to encourage the commission to really take a hard look at this and to do whatever we need to do. I'm not sure if at this point you need an EA for this. I don't think you need an environmental impact statement, but to get this started. But take a very serious look. It's the number 7th item on the comments on your management plan, the new management plan. So I think it's really worth looking at. I'm, of course, really in favor of myself because I really like pronghorns, and they've really seem to be doing very well where they're at right now. If you have questions for me now or later, I'll be around.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Holzmiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many antelope do you have in this region?
Well, that's a good question. That's another thing. We're going to put together a working group. And we're having a meeting on October 23rd.
Just a ballpark. I mean,
yeah,
5 or 50 or 500 or what?
Well, we brought in 99. And there have been groups of over 50 that have been seen. And they've scattered out over quite a wide area. That's one of the things that needs to be done is a good census this winter. We're going to try to get that done. But I would say they've had 4 fawn drops. So most of the animals they're seeing in these groups don't have ear tags. So they are offspring. So I think we've got a pretty substantial number out there, maybe at least a couple hundred or more by now.
Why I ask is the winter before last, we had 3 in Houghton County, and I mean, that freaked people out to see pronghorn antelope. And I mean, it was one of those deals. We got some good pictures of them. So I mean, it isn't some wisetail, but that's, we were trying to figure out where in the world they had come from.
Well, I think those probably came from Oregon. That's the other thing. In Oregon, in the fringes of the Columbia Basin, they had 69 tags, and they killed 35 antelope last year. So, you know, the potential is really there. You know, I know we've got a lot of ag land out there, but still lots of land available for pronghorns.
Like I said, how they ended up where they ended up had everybody guessing.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Commissioner Schmitten?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And Mr. Stevenson, first of all, thank you for all those years of service and your interest. You said you'd like to have us consider getting on board. Are you suggesting taking over with state management, those animals off outside of the reservation?
Well,
what do you mean by that?
Yes, that, and to continue reintroduction. You know, this is one of the things in the past where they had very few animals that they brought in, and they didn't. They lasted for 10 or 20 years, but you need that good gene pool. And the more genetic material you've got, the better off you are. They are available. Right now in Wyoming, Warren Air Force Base, there's about 350 head within the confines of the base that they want to get rid of. And I wasn't able to work a deal with them when I was with the tribe, but the state might be able to do something like that.
Thank you so much. Yes. Director Anderson.
Thanks very much. Good to see you, Jim. Are there issues with crop damage with pronghorns?
Yes. Most of the crop damage is on winter wheat and alfalfa. They don't go into tall vegetation. They avoid that. They evolve to avoid that. With winter wheat, if you look at the evidence, it actually enhances the crop because the winter wheat, when it's grazed on, it stools out, and then when it produces more grain. With alfalfa, small patches of alfalfa, you have problems. They are relatively easy to keep out of the alfalfa, and I've included that in the brochure there. So.
Thanks. Good to see you.
The other one was diseases, and I think that is not a real problem, perceived but not real.
Hold on. Okay. One more. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, some years ago, I lived in the East Slope of Colorado and ran a couple manufacturing plants, one in Trinidad and one in Rocky Ford, and there were pronghorns. They were very prolific in that area. They're a wonderful game species. People just are rabid to hunt for them, and I don't know the biology of how they fit into our state, but we drove down through the Hanford region. Commissioner Mencken said, why aren't there pronghorns here? I mean, it looks very similar to eastern Colorado, and even the climate's a little more mild, so I don't know the mechanics of it, but I know there'd be a wonderful species to introduce hunters to in this state.
That's correct. They're like Yakima Training Center, Clallam, and Hanford are the biggest chunks of land, but there's land throughout the state like that. That's...
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, Chris Highland. Now, this is a little out of the norm. We've had a request to do a presentation, and this is a colleague of Commissioner Holtzmiller's, so we're giving him a special opportunity here.
Thank you, Commissioners, for giving me some time today to cover this issue. I'm just here representing myself and some other folks in Southeast Washington. I'm from Walla Walla. I don't represent an organized group. There's a lot of folks that are interested in this issue I'd like to discuss with you. And I just want to talk about springers in the Columbia. And this is just sport fishing. This doesn't have anything to do with commercial gill netting, nothing with the tribes. And I just want to talk, I'm going to focus it on down, just about the geographic distribution of where those fish are caught between Oregon and Washington and the three areas you're probably familiar with, which is Lower Columbia, Zone 6, which is Bonneville to McNary, and then the Snake. And just so you know, myself and some other folks, elected officials, we met with Director Anderson, I mean, it's over 2 years ago on this issue. This isn't something recent. Myself and others were just disappointed there hasn't been a lot of movement on this issue, and that's not a knock against Director Anderson. I think he's done a great job in a very difficult position. This is just one of many contentious issues that he has to deal with, but even not necessarily that we can have movement, but if we could see a path forward, if you will, and I'll talk about more about that later. And so there's been a number of letters that have been sent into the department to Director Anderson and to the chair. These are from Snake River Salmon Recovery Board, and then a number of county commissioners and port commissioners in our areas have written in as well. And basically what I want to try to highlight for you is how myself and others feel that the harvest in these three areas is not distributed fairly, if you will. Again, some of you may be familiar with some of these numbers, but above Bonneville Dam, we're only allocated 25% of ESA impact, which is the real driver on what is allowed to be caught. But because the vast majority of the stocks above Bonneville are ESA listed, and there's some below Bonneville or not, the primary one being Willamette fish, it's never going to equal a split of 75-25 for harvest. It's always going to be much more fish are going to be caught below Bonneville with that kind of distribution of the ESA impacts. And I've tried to get an answer as to why 25%, and I've never really heard a good answer to that from staff. You know, I'd even submit to you that that number is pretty arbitrary. And so again, this goes back to part of the slide presentation that I went over with Director Anderson back in 2013. And what's, you know, been frustrating is, you know, again, what rationale has there been? People talked about, well, that was your historical fishery when this policy was set, 3617. But we've only really been fishing on these fish since 2001. And prior to that, there was almost a 25-year gap. So the 25% impacts just allowed a historical fishery from 2001 forward, which again, I don't think there's a whole lot of basis for. And so again, going back to when the previous policy was shaped and even the current one that we're dealing with, what we found is that the whole spring Chinook allocation system seems to be driven by, I believe it's Region 5 below Bonneville. And so back in 2008, when that original policy got set up, these are the people who set it. And, you know, some of the folks in this room are part of that group. But, see, our concern is that you'll notice everybody who was a citizen advisor of this group, everybody was below Bonneville. These policies are getting set without having input from folks above Bonneville. And so with the structure of the ESA impacts and only giving out 25% of the impacts above Bonneville for these two areas, Zone 6 and the Snake, this is what has happened over the past number of years since 2001. What it allows is that of the spring Chinook catch between Oregon and Washington, the vast, vast majority of these fish are getting caught below Bonneville. Now, this is a quick slide I'm going to throw in below economics. So I said 87% before, so but when I add in commercial harvest and it jumps to that number, that the fish get caught below Bonneville. And so another question is, beyond just the equity in this, the economic aspect is, why should people below Bonneville get 90% of the economic benefits of this run? Shouldn't those be distributed more equitably? And you know, how do you say what's a fair share? And I agree, there's many different ways to do it, but what I would submit and what a lot of others of us would like to see is we would point out the Columbia River Salmon Steelhead endorsement sales that have been going on since 2010. So I divided up counties into west side and east side, just ran the numbers, and that's your split that you get. In terms of, and as you know, that tag is required to fish for salmon or steel in the Columbia Basin. So how it shakes out then is you've got 62% of the tag sales on the west side, and you have 87% of the harvest going there. And I've had staff say to me, well, that's not a real accurate indicator, because you could have somebody from Spokane who fishes for 5 days and he only fishes in Kathlamet. That's right. You could have somebody from King County and all he ever does is fish for steelhead in Okanagan. Yep, that's right. But what other metric, what better measuring stick is there to divide up harvest as opposed to an arbitrary 25% figure? And I haven't heard one. I'm open ears if somebody's got a better idea. But in terms of dividing up harvest, my suggestion is let's divide it up to where the anglers are. And so there's other benefits of doing harvest in this manner. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that goes on right now that shows when you harvest 90% of those fish all below Bonneville, you're hitting the front end of that run really hard. You're not distributing across the bell curve. And so you know, I'm trying to get some more information on this, some data and some scientific information, but anecdotally from guys that are biologists that I talk to, they're saying, you know, we're really hitting the front end of the spring Chinook run. And what this would also do, when you shift more of the harvest upriver up Bonneville, you're going to get more fish across Bonneville. And Bonneville's the first place where we can count them with certainty in that area. And so right now, what staff has is a very, very difficult job of estimating that run. Now, if we can get more fish across Bonneville, that's going to help us a lot. Because what goes on below Bonneville, that run is basically harvested, prosecuted by paper fish, if you will, because they're trying to handle estimates, krill checks, etc. But if we can get those fish across Bonneville, we can get hard numbers. And so this should reduce the amount of times that the run would have to be drastically changed in terms of the harvest, in terms of closing fisheries early or not. And, you know, again, 90% of those fish being caught below Bonneville, that basically means Portland and Vancouver. I know that's the driver, okay? But I would submit to you that if we could catch 100 fish around Starbuck, that's a huge impact to that local economy. Catching 100 fish in Vancouver is a drop in the bucket to that local economy. I've got a longer article, and I'll have copies here. I can leave them with Jay. That if anybody's interested, I wrote an article. This is the current issue of that magazine, Stam and Steelhead Journal. And I kind of laid out in a 4 or 5 page story, if you will, my case as to why harvest should be distributed this way. And so if anybody's interested in a little bit more reading, I've got that here to leave with you. So what are the requests, specific requests that, you know, myself and others in Southeast Washington, Central Washington would like to see? And, you know, we'd really like to see harvest used as the metric, not divide up ESA. When you start talking about ESA impacts, people's eyes glaze over. It tends to put the whole exercise in kind of a black box. Why not make it real easy for everybody to understand and just, instead of saying we're going to divide up ESA impacts, let's divide up harvest. And then again, going back to my previous slide, I would like to see harvest geographically set up with salmon steelhead tag sales. I don't know of a better way to do it, you know. And again, I'm open to other ideas on that, and other people are as well. And then finally, the way the whole salmon Columbia River Basin public meetings, hearings, the Columbia River Recreational Fishery Advisory Group, for example, there's 18 members from Oregon and Washington. There's only one member in that group above Bonneville. There just seems to be a huge bias that the river begins and ends at Bonneville. And everything that goes on past Bonneville is a second-class citizen. And that's all I've got. I really appreciate the time. Be happy to answer any questions.
Anybody? Questions? Commissioner Keeney?
I don't have any questions. I just wanted to say that was a great presentation, very thoughtful, very to the point, and very easy to understand. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair, and Mr. Hyland. I thought it was very professional. We have a lot of staff that do not very much better than what you've just done.
Thank you.
Let me indicate this is primarily a mid-Columbia River issue. It does affect the Upper Columbia, and so I have a bias. You know, in the past, Commissioner Duvier and I worked very hard on passing summer Chinook through. They all originate in the Upper River. They're non-ESA, and trying to get a deference in which we have set as a policy in this body. Perhaps we were wrong. Perhaps now that we have springers before us, that we should have had a more comprehensive look, but that's the history. You know, every time we touch the issue of who gets how much, those are the toughest ones we start wading into and difficult ones to deal with. But I look at something like this, I try and tease out what's significant and what is happening. And there's a couple of givens. Tribal pieces for me off the table. ESA impacts, and I guess I kind of differ a little bit with Chris. That's a given right now. Maybe that could be looked at some time, but that was going to be tougher to get at, 75-25. Then I started looking at a couple fundamental ones. What's the origin of the fish? Where are they coming from? Who's raising these fish? And I don't know if my numbers are exactly the same, but 64% of spring Chinook come from hatcheries above Bonneville. That's 19.8 million fish. Over 10 million come out of the Snake River. Idaho has a real stake in this issue. And that's been recognized. How much, I'm not sure. But, and then the second piece, who's catching them? And my numbers do differ a little bit. I have 81% below Bonneville and 19% above for Springers. I think Chris was 87 and 13. But you get the point. It's a pretty big spread. So what do you do is what it boils down to. And, you know, I know we had a little ad hoc group a year or two ago that beat the heads together and were unable to give us any advice. And I'm not sure if the constitution of that group, I know it was pretty heavily lower river strong in the bias, not a bias, but a majority. And I'd urge a reconstitution of some group with some authority, but, you know, still allowing 60 or 70% lower river, but not the one person from the mid or the upper Columbia. You know, seek a balance. Have Idaho a part of that. Idaho wasn't even in the mix last time. So you have a little geographic distribution. It'd be good if they could meet, take some information from Wenatchee, from Pasco, and then multiple meetings, the primary area being Vancouver. So it's to see it outlined like this really helped me, and I think that it's worth taking a look at again.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Raleigh, for the comments you made. I was involved with Commissioner Smitten and Commissioner Minkin as the work group on the interacting with Oregon on our final adopted policy and so on the Columbia River management. And I guess the one thing I learned during that is the Columbia River Fisheries Management Program is the most complicated in the world. And we just scratched the surface trying to understand that in order to bring recommendations back to the balance of our commission. Some of the points you brought up are very, very profound. I mean, I come from a rural community, and I'm very sensitive to that. So I think what you put on the table is something that we can drill down on a little bit, and okay, with staff perhaps come back with some review of that and some reasonable time frame.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Commissioner Mencken.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. It was well done. Your comments on front loading, I think, are very pertinent. And from the point of view of hatchery reform, it should be an important element in hatchery reform because it has genetic impacts. There's no question about that. It's an easy thing to do in a hatchery as well as in a fishery to either fish heavily on the front of a run because those are the most valuable fish because in terms of market value, or you can do it at a hatchery by selecting your hatchery brood stock for insurance purposes that you're going to get your egg take from the front end of the hatchery run. And we have some good examples in the literature of that. One of them is with coho in the Lower Columbia River, where they're selected, they were for a number of years selected from the front end of the run of coho. And what it did, it changed run timing to a later date. And it was significant. It was like several weeks of change. So in hatchery reform policy, what the Hatchery Scientific Review Group tries to do is to influence people to take their eggs from the entire run, so you have representation of early running fish and late running fish in your population. But there's been no attempt that I know of to address it in harvest. So thank you for bringing that up.
Welcome.
Commissioner Holtzmiller.
Well, first and foremost, I just want to thank Chris for
doing a very well presented presentation, and Chris and I've been talking for a while, and he's been scrambling trying to get people to come. But in the fall, hunters and fishermen are hunting and fishing. Believe that. So, no, thank you for taking your time and coming. And this is a huge issue in our part of the world. It truly is, because we do feel that we're kind of catching the short end of the stick. The economics are huge, and there again, we've done a lot of salmon and steelhead restoration projects, and you'd like to reap the benefits from those. And it does kind of bother you when you see landowners do that. Our timber harvests have some pretty major setbacks and all of this, and then all of a sudden all the fish are getting caught down the river. You kind of feel like, why? So, but most of all, thanks, Chris, for doing a really good job.
You're welcome.
Dr. Anderson?
Thanks, Chris. Good to see you.
Good to see you again.
Great presentation.
Thank you.
I gave the commission a few updates on spring Chinook allocation and hatchery production yesterday as part of my director's report. And I want to make sure I stay in my lane here. This is a zero-sum game, there aren't any unused fish out there, and the commission has devoted a fair amount of attention to spring Chinook over the course of the last 5 years or so. We're in the process of implementing the policy. There are allocation shifts being made from commercial to sport. There are benefits being derived from those changes to varying degrees, depending on where you are, where you're fishing in the system. I was thinking, as Commissioner Schmitten mentioned, the change in or the policy associated with summer Chinook and how that was done kind of in isolation. And I do think it's good to think about when we're thinking about salmon and allocation and opportunities that are available to citizens across the state, that we think about them in totality as well as individually, and I think it's good to keep that in mind when we're looking at that question. We do have, something close to 30 million spring Chinook releases in different parts of the river that I touched on yesterday. The majority of the funding to produce those fish are coming from federal sources and local PUDs, those kinds of sources, with a couple of exceptions, with ODF and W putting some money into some of the production that's in the lower river. We did put together a group, and I don't know what the composition was off the top of my head, and we looked at this question, and there were kind of two primary alternatives developed. One was looking at effort. One was looking at a 60-40 split of ESA impacts, and one gave to one and took away from the other, and the other did the reverse. And not surprisingly, we didn't get consensus. And we were just coming off this intense process of changing the policy, going through the reallocation between recreational and commercial, and so we were doing this right on the heels of that, and some of those folks that were really engaged in that process were then looking at the potential of a reallocation, which would essentially left them with status quo or less opportunity than they had before the change in the allocation between sport and commercial. So that was going on as well. The other piece that I would just ask you to be mindful of is when we're looking at Mitchell Act cuts, all of those cuts are coming from below Bonneville Dam so far. And you know that we have $800,000 worth of cuts that are being implemented now. Those cuts are all coming from below Bonneville. as additional, there's a clause in U.S. v. Oregon that talks about Mitchell Act reductions, and if those reductions come about, that the priority for cuts will be below Bonneville. So I should keep that in mind. If the commission directs us to start a process to take another look at how the sport allocation is divided geographically, we would come back with a proposal on kind of a process and timeline. I would like to be able to do that in the context of the workload, so that we don't, it's not to this specific issue, but that we don't just throw another big workload on without being mindful of the current workload of the same staff that would be responsible for carrying that out. So if it were the direction from the commission as a result of this discussion to develop a process and timeline, that would also give us a chance to look at our workload as to whether, you know, if we're going to move forward with that, do we start right away? Do we look at workload and say, well, we might want to delay the start of that to balance out the workload so that we're able to do a good job. So those are just a few thoughts that I would offer.
Thank you. Commissioner Mankin?
Maybe a place to start would be to see that if they're allocated 25%, that they get their 25%. If Chris's data is correct, he demonstrates that it's a lot less.
You'll recall,
yes.
Commissioner Mankin, you'll recall I went through that yesterday with you, and that was certainly the case prior to the time that we instituted the buffer, the 30% buffer, which was explicit in part, was designed to two things. But one of the things was so that we weren't in the position where the lower river fishery was preempting the upriver fishery, because if the run size comes in smaller than forecast, then we don't have enough ESA impacts to meet the 75-25. I think the information that I presented to you yesterday looked at 2010 through 2014, the allocated amount versus the actual catch demonstrates that that's no longer occurring, that the allocation is being achieved. When you look at the longer time frame that Chris put in, that's true. That his numbers were absolutely right. I mean, I didn't look at it, but that's what was happening until we went to the buffered approach, where we weren't trying to make all of the allocations based on certainty that the preseason run forecast would actually be realized.
Commissioner Holtzmiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then, what do we need to maybe start the process? I can thoroughly understand what Phil said, that they don't need a whole big chunk dropped on them and say we need it tomorrow, but at least start the process and then maybe see what it takes to get some representation from this side of Bonneville.
I would suggest we turn this topic over to the Fish Committee for the initial discussion. That's the usual way we approach big topics. This is a significant workload issue, so we'd like the Fish Committee to work with the director and figure out when we would take up this topic if we want to, and the kinds of issues that we would look at. Director Anderson?
Yeah, I think following up on that idea, we want to make sure that our stakeholders are aware that there is the potential to go down this road, that we would put together a process and timeline, a draft, what that might look like, and maybe try to bring that to the Fish Committee at the November meeting. of the Fish Committee. And then in December, well, we'll see, but in November or December, we would bring in, the Fish Committee would report to the full commission relative to our discussions within the committee. Probably then, if there was a decision to move forward, probably put the process and timeline out for kind of public review and comment maybe in January, and then see where we go from there, but something like that.
Commissioner Holtzmiller.
I was wondering if we could keep Chris in the loop a little bit so that, you know, he'd get an email address or something so that he could be told how things are progressing. Is that too big a request or not?
No, of course not.
Well, I mean, the other thing that we'll want to do is take a look at if we were going to, I suspect that we would want to pull together an ad hoc work group. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to keep Chris informed as to what we're doing. On the other hand, I want to also keep others that are interested informed too. So need to think about what the best way to do that is. But we can certainly, if Chris isn't already on our list of regular folks that we communicate with, we will certainly add him, and maybe he'd be willing to leave me his contact information.
Certainly.
Okay. Commissioner Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I always marvel at the value added the director gives. Mm-hmm. First of all, you pointed out the complexities, and as this is not going to be easy, but he also gave some guidance on kind of a two-step process, and I support. I actually like the idea because it's consistent with how we manage of going to the Fish Committee, and I think the maximum we should expect in that first step is it worthwhile to develop a process and timeline and then come back to the commission and say, should we take the next step, and that is to proceed. So I think that's good. As far as informing Chris individually, perhaps, you know, we need to make sure he's informed, but I'm not sure that's an assignment for the director or the commission. We should work through Jay for a lot and have Jay do that for us. Or I could see our director doing that for individuals all over the state. But Chris is nodding, and the bottom line, Chris, is you have a right to know what we're doing, and obviously a vested interest in it. But the Fish Committee, as outlined by the director in those time frames, you know, will engage, and we'll keep Jay very informed. If we have a subcommittee, I would hope that he'd be on that subcommittee, and we'll keep you going.
Okay. And great. And if I could only offer one suggestion to whoever the subgroup is formed, I assume it'd be commissioner staff and anglers guides. Let's get our Oregon counterparts involved so that we can, you know, progress down to the end. I mean, because it's not going to make sense that everybody here agrees, then Oregon says, well, I don't want to do this.
Thank you. Thanks much. So you've got another job, Fish Committee. Okay. We do have one more person who signed up. We'll go back into our standard open public input item. Steve Allen, do you please come forward? Welcome.
Have a couple of minutes here. I grew up in Eastern Washington, right here in the Tri-Cities. I'm just primarily a recreational sports fisherman. My concerns primarily are the sturgeon fishery and waterfowling opportunities here in this area. I want to thank you for all your efforts to date. I've been very impressed by your openness. And you must be doing a fantastic job because the public turnout is kind of pathetic today. So you must be doing something right.
That's how we look at it.
Yeah. I spent a career in the military, the Air Force. After growing up here in Richland, I decided to relocate my family back here for several reasons. One of the key reasons was the recreational opportunities for fishing, hunting, outdoor activities, and I really haven't been disappointed to any great extent from your efforts to keep that going. I do have some concerns when I read about budget constraints and closing hatcheries and cutting back on programs and they're reducing the fish and wildlife personnel in the field, then that bothers me a little bit, bothers me a lot. And I just want to say I spend more on shotgun shells and bait, okay, than I do for licenses and fees. So if there's programs on the table that can be enhanced or expanded with regards to public access to private lands, then I don't mind an increase in those fees, which I feel overall are pretty darn reasonable. Okay, so I hate to see a program bite the dust because, you know, there's concern over a raise in the license and fees. I'm kind of a silent member of the Richland Rod and Gun Club, and I want to especially thank those fish and wildlife people regionally that come out and talk to that group and give us an idea of what's happening as far as fishing and hunting opportunities. I think that's great. So that's basically all I wanted to say today. But again, thank you for your efforts so far, and if there's anything more that you can do for sturgeon enhancement along the lower and mid-Columbia, I'd sure be interested in hearing about that, and I appreciate those efforts. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Okay. We appreciate it. All right. Well, that concludes the